The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Happy Columbus Day. Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Monday, October 8th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, industry experts are suggesting transportation concerns will create an ethanol bottleneck in upcoming months. Also, the latest on the Farm Bill, and USDA promises to react quicker to potential contaminated food outbreaks. I'll have these and other stories this half hour, and Todd Gleason will be by with a report about escalating farmland prices. It's all on the Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Monday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. December wheat, $8.64 and a half down 30. March, 865 and three quarters down 30. At the Chicago Board of Trade, December wheat, 860 down 30. March, 872 down 30. July, 657 and a quarter down 29 and a quarter. December corn, 339 and three quarters down 2.5. March, 356 and a quarter down 2.75. May, 367 down 2.5. December of next year, 391 down 2.5. November soybeans, 925 and a half down 15. January, 942 down 18. March, 955 and three quarters down 15 and a half. November of next year, 916 and a quarter down 20 and three quarters. October soybean meal, 254.70 down 4.70. December, 260.50 down 4.90. October soybean oil, 37.98 down 52. December, 38.48 down 55. At the Merck, October live cattle, 93.72 and a half up 5. October feeders, 113.85 down 10. October lean hogs, 57.67 and a half down 55 on the day. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the futures market is Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, it got no better after the opening bell. We pretty much locked limit down on wheat in the morning and stayed there all day. What does it mean?
Well, we're going to see some follow-through action looking at the number of orders for sale and the synthetics in the option pit to just suggest 15 to 16 cent lower open in the electronic trade this evening, so that's going to push right around this 845 area. You'll see if that level holds or not. If we can't hold 45, 40 and through here, they'll start talking $8 December Chicago wheat up front here. Sort of a meltdown. European values are lower. Demand's pretty well filled up here. We saw a lot of panic buying here in the last few weeks. If you've been monitoring the export sales report, we've already sold 80% of our commitments in just 3 months of the marketing year. So it tells me we did not go high enough to ration the supply or cut back on demand. Demand came forward and booked up here for a while. Then plus two, you know, we've seen the dollar start to turn here a little bit, and that might have put the brakes on the buying somewhat too. As far as the rains go, the Australian rains, that's quite debatable though. They are receiving some rains, but the ideas are some of those rains are a little bit too late to help a lot of that crop. But the rains here in the U.S. are quite beneficial, especially in the Western Belt. We've seen a lot of wheat go in. even here in the eastern part of the Midwest, some dry areas that wasn't quite suitable to produce or putting the wheat in, and these rains are going to help the U.S. outcrop tremendously here if we can continue to see those over the next few weeks.
On wheat charts, we broke the 20-day moving average today, and I have to ask you if you suspect that large speculators are in the process of building a brand new short position.
Well, I think the psychology's changed over the last year on some of the speculative trading systems. In the past, you can really watch that 40 and 50-day moving average, and whenever you're above it, they're in the buy mode. Whenever they're below it, they're in the sell mode, and you can even tighten that up to some shorter-term averages and so forth. But what I'm getting to is the overall shift to a net short position is probably going to be hard to achieve for some time. In order for the trade to shift that fast of position, you'd see the, especially from long to short, you'd see the futures locked down for probably a good solid week, if not more. So we'll have to monitor that as time goes on in here. The overall psychology is still to be long the futures market, grain complex, especially if you're a fundamental trader. We'll have confirmation on Friday's USDA report. We're still looking at the tightest ending world inventory in modern-day history, and we don't have the spring wheat crop coming out and being harvested just yet. We got to wait till next spring before we have a really ample supply of wheat to be in the world pipeline.
Soybean prices also consolidating today, and I have to ask you if you think that the bleeding might stop at the June highs or not.
Well, as far as the beans go, we've done some technical damage here. We're in a pullback mode in through here. If you look at the chart, obviously the November is probably going to pull back to the $9 level, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. Basically, if you take the August low and project this last high halfway back down, we had a little over a $2 rally. That puts us right there. If that doesn't hold, you can look at maybe a Fibonacci 62% retracement. And I would think those would be the two benchmarks to look at. Timing's right for an 8-week cycle low in the beans. Also, too, there's an old saying that gentlemen in the grain pit don't trade the short side after Columbus Day. So we'll see what develops in through here. We're definitely got the trend down, and as soon as the selling pressure runs out of steam, it'll be interesting to see what type of technical turn we have. I wouldn't be real bearish beans from the standpoint, if you do the math, and if you're a fundamentalist and you look at the supply-demand balance sheet in the next year, if we do not see an increase of 4 to 5 million acres, and you keep everything consistent from this year into next year, you'll have a deficit of over 125 million bushels of beans. So there's still a lot of roller coaster activity to take place in the bean complex as we go into 2008.
Meanwhile, over in the corn pit, prices held up surprisingly well given what was going on all around it.
Yeah, that was the main theme today. Everybody was really impressed with the corn market, with what's taking place here, and with the negative news of big yields. We're going to have over probably 13.5 billion bushel corn number on Friday morning. They take yield on higher and through there, and big harvest activity. But I think corn found the benefit of a spread unwinding. For quite some time, the trade bought wheat, sold corn, bought beans, sold corn, and we feel that the corn was beneficial from some unwinding spread. Also, too, when you see that shift in spread and the value around, corn's probably one of the cheapest commodities on the board at the present time, and so there was some value being found there. But, corn's going to take some time to regroup in through here. There's no question about it. we're looking at bigger supplies than we were looking at 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. So it's going to take a little time for the trucks to haul away some of these big piles we've got stacked out there. And also, to regain some confidence or give reason for the trade to come in and buy the marketplace.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Taking a look at Ed Kieser's two-state forecast tonight. He says in northwestern and west-central Illinois, clear to partly cloudy and cooler. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows ranging from around 50 in northwestern Illinois to 65 in southeastern Indiana. Then tomorrow, in southeastern Indiana, mostly cloudy with some lingering showers early, then becoming mostly sunny. Elsewhere, mostly sunny with highs ranging from 65 degrees in northwestern Illinois to 82 degrees in the far south. Tomorrow, wind speeds of 10 to 20 miles per hour, and the minimum afternoon relative humidity between 35 and 45%. In agricultural news, pressure is mounting on President George Bush to sign the Water Resources Development Act. President Bush has threatened to veto the bill, saying it's too expensive and contains projects that are not a national priority. The National Corn Growers Association and the American Farm Bureau Federation have sent letters to President Bush encouraging him to sign the measure. Energy experts are warning that once U.S. ethanol production doubles, there may not be enough transportation to get it to market. About 85% of the nation's 400 to 500 gasoline terminals that blend ethanol are not equipped to take in rail cars. And currently, about 75% of the nation's ethanol is moved by rail. Consultants to the Renewable Fuels Association say that is a recipe for an ethanol bottleneck over the next year. USDA officials say they will speed up warnings about contaminated meat in the future. Last week, USDA officials revealed they knew as early as September 7th that frozen hamburger patties could be contaminated with E. coli bacteria, but the department waited 18 days before concluding Topps Meat Company should issue a recall. And all about 22 million pounds of hamburger was recalled, the second largest beef recall in U.S. history. In pencil, circle October 23rd on your calendar. That's the latest projected day the Senate Ag Committee is expected to mark up the 2007 Farm Bill. Senate Agriculture Committee spokesperson Kate Cyril.
The chairman is now looking toward the week of October 22nd to resume the markup, and we will be scheduling something formally in the coming days. The reason that we are not going toward the week of the 15th is because in his dual chairmanship, Senator Harkin has to manage floor time on the Labor HHS Appropriations Bill. He is also chairman of the Appropriations Labor HHS Subcommittee.
Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin had originally planned to wrap up the Farm Bill before Independence Day, but a lack of funding and attention from non-traditional agricultural groups has slowed Farm Bill progress to a crawl. University of Illinois agriculture policy expert Bob Thompson.
This time we've got a really unbelievable diversity of groups from very right-wing think tanks, taxpayers, associations, all the way to fairly left-leaning think tanks and advocacy groups as well, basically all saying that the Farm Bill is broken, our farm policy is broken and needs to be changed. There's been an unprecedented flow of adverse media coverage and editorial comment across the newspapers of the country from coast to coast.
Late last week, the Senate Finance Committee approved a $16 billion package to establish a permanent ag disaster aid program and create incentives for renewable energy, rural development, and conservation. But Acting USDA Secretary Chuck Connor says what's really needed is reform, not more money.
through making some difficult policy choices, some tough policy choices. That's how you're going to have the funding to ensure that you've got $4 billion of additional help for specialty crops, for example. This was one of the problems we identified with the House-passed bill. They were very generous on specialty crops and some of our other priorities, but they paid for all of that with a tax increase. And I think that really puts the outcome of those priority changes in real jeopardy, because there doesn't appear to be anyone in the Senate who's particularly enthusiastic about raising taxes in order to pay for a farm bill.
Congress is now in recess as members are observing Columbus Day in their home districts. The food industry's largest trade group has unveiled its proposal for more regulation of imported food and ingredients to address the risk that unsafe products could enter the U.S. The Grocery Manufacturers Association is calling for development of more scientific and analytical tools that allow better identification of potential risks, procedures that monitor the effectiveness of prevention measures, and increased use of information technology for inspection and surveillance. The association's proposal would also require the adoption of a foreign supplier quality assurance program by U.S. food importers, requiring verification that imported products meet FDA food safety requirements. The American Farm Bureau Federation says the unending immigration debate is taking a toll on agriculture. Jonna Miller is with the AFBF, and she has this report.
As the immigration debate continues, farmers and ranchers are asking Congress to find a solution to the labor challenges that debate is causing. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman testified at a House Agriculture Committee hearing on the labor needs of American agriculture to describe the severity of the problem.
As I travel around the country, I'm constantly asked by farmers, when is Congress going to fix our labor problem? Of course, I can't answer that question. Only you can. But I'm here today to ask you to find an answer and find it quickly.
Agriculture hires about 1 million workers, and Stallman cited Labor Department estimates that say at least half of those workers lack legal authorization to be here.
We all know the law needs to be changed. Farmers know that. We support it. Our nation must secure its borders. We must assure that those who are working here are entitled to do so, but don't cripple agriculture in the process.
Stallman urged Congress to work on legislation to fix the problems. Jonna Miller, Washington.
And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The value of farmland in Illinois is still going up. Todd Gleason has more on recent and past farmland value trends in the Prairie State.
The value of farmland in the state of Illinois has continued to increase, up 92% since 2007, says the University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Dale Latz. Latz says the average farm real estate value for Illinois in 2007 was $4,330 an acre. That's the highest on record. This includes the value of all land and buildings. The figure was 13.9% higher than the 2006 average of $3,800 an acre. Latz has released a report on the value of Illinois farmland. It can be found on the Farm Doc website. The address, www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The title is Illinois Farm Real Estate Values Continued Double-Digit Increases. The 2007 increase, based on figures from the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, marked the third year in a row of double-digit increases in Illinois, and the 13.9% increase is the third highest year-over-year increase since 1979. By the way, farm real estate values in Illinois have shown a year-over-year increase every year since 1988, or 20 consecutive years. Since 1970, average farm real estate values have declined only 5 times in Illinois as compared to the previous year. Those years were 1982, 83, 85, and 1987. There have been 4 years when farm real estate values increased over 20%, in 1974, 76, 77, and 2005. The largest increase, by the way, came in 1977 when values rose an astounding 37.3%. More recently, from 1994 through 99, the average farm real estate values increased between 4.2 and 9% annually. And from 2000 to 2004, the increase ranged from 1.3% to 7.4%. Since 2004, the yearly increase for farmland values in the state of Illinois has averaged 18.5%. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring ProPricing Grain Contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at CargillProPricing.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Wyatt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
What can you tell me about transportation and how it might be impacting on basis at the moment?
Trains are not having terrible time moving right now. The southeast seems to be fairly hungry for corn, and basis seems to be coming back a little bit, at least on the rail side. I think part of that is because the dryness across Ohio and into the southeast might encourage the farmers to remain holders of the grain, and some of that's not working its way into the feeder market as quick as it may have. The CIF market going down the river for export is firm today and seems to be holding on fairly well.
Not only the feeder market, but I would think the ethanol market out there as well.
Yeah, certainly. I think most of the plants in that area probably had their needs for harvest booked, but going into the deferreds, it may get interesting if the crop is as short as we thought it was in the east.
Meanwhile, how is business going at your place? Are you slowing down on people selling it?
A little bit. I think the receipts are slowing down some. I think we've probably made it over that hump. If you look to the south and east of here, there's a bit more grain than to the south and west. But as a whole, we've been maintaining receipts. Beans probably over the past week have been our bigger share of things. And going into the next week, I'd say people will probably be getting back into some of the later corn. Everything seems to be coming in very dry. Our average on moisture is probably one of the driest it's ever been at 15%, and it's been nice for us to stay this dry for piling corn on the ground.
Versus your five-year average, what would you say about how the percentage of producers who are selecting to store with you for later months?
That's a very good question. Well, I think, first of all, everyone's used their bins this year. Everyone knows the carries are very nice, and I would expect all the bins in the country are full and people are using them. So as far as commercial storage, we're just getting to that point where people are filling their contracted bushels and really getting into the time where they make the decision, do I store it or do I sell it? And the past week's board activity certainly hasn't helped that out.
So what are you looking at for basis to do then over the next 2 weeks?
I would say from here out, basis continues to improve. Like I mentioned before, we've made it over that hump, over the harvest glut, and at this point we'll probably be bidding to gain bushels as we can.
And your prices today, sir?
Our cash corn is $3.15 and cash soybeans are $8.97.
Thank you very much, Wyatt.
All right, enjoy your day.
Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And in 2 minutes, we'll have agricultural weather with the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A new program is attempting to bridge the gap between employers, employees, and the new technologies they need to use. The director of the University of Illinois' new Social Technical Systems program says the fields of human relations and technology rarely speak the same language, so it's important for businesses to translate the technology they need into the real world of the workplace. Courses are beginning this fall. Authorities are investigating the apparent suicide of the son of former Illinois Attorney General Jim Ryan. It's the latest tragedy for a family that survived illness and the death of another child. Police found 24-year-old Patrick Ryan dead of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound after a relative reported seeing him with a handgun at his family's home in Elmhurst. The death is the latest tragedy to hit the Ryan family. Jim Ryan has survived multiple bouts of cancer. In 1997, his 12-year-old daughter died of a brain tumor shortly after complaining of a headache, and not long after that, his wife nearly died after complaining of chest pains. Ryan was the Republican candidate for governor in 2002, losing to current governor Rod Blagojevich. Indiana lawmakers say they're making progress sorting through various property tax restructuring plans. The chairman of the Senate Tax Committee, Luke Kenley, chairs a bipartisan commission on property taxes and says there is consensus on the goals. Lawmakers want to provide significant property tax relief for Indiana homeowners. Some runners are demanding answers after problems at yesterday's Chicago Marathon. Many of them are lambasting organizers for failing to provide enough water and sports drinks, even though they knew days in advance that temperatures would approach record highs. Tents are rising in Urbana's Crystal Lake Park today for an event larger than anything the park district's ever put on. The district is celebrating its centennial with a Chautauqua. It's a six-day combination of music and dance events, speeches, religious events, and food. The concept has its foundation in a movement that was popular around the turn of the 20th century. The Chautauqua was considered an educational activity that both entertained and informed small towns. The Urbana Chautauqua begins tomorrow evening. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The Sears Tower, the Great Pyramids, the Statue of Liberty, these are all big things. One thing that's not on the list, WILL's pledge drive. In fact, our pledge drives have been getting smaller and smaller each year, all thanks to you and the Power Hour. During the Power Hour, we'll raise a full day's worth of pledges in 1 hour. That way, we can cut down on the length of the pledge drive. So tune into the Power Hour, 7 a.m. Thursday, October 11th, and keep pledge drives as small as possible.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
I am doing well, but I'm wondering, is Brazil doing well in terms of precipitation and especially northern Brazil?
Yeah, we're starting to see thunderstorm activity finally breaking out over the weekend here, and really the key to the forecast in northern Brazil is the retrogression of the ridge of high pressure that's dominated that side of the world for the past several weeks. That's finally moving off to the east. We're starting to see thunderstorm activity develop in the northern belt, and that's going to continue to expand over the next 5 to 7 days. And into next week, we'll see a frontal passage start to move into the area, and thus, while starting perhaps a touch later than climatology would say, it's still precipitation is starting to come in the form of thunderstorm activity.
How much rain might we see north of Santa Catarina?
Well, it's going to be variable because it's thunderstorm activity, but certainly in any area, 5 to 25 millimeters would be likely over the next week. And then as you get further into next week, 65 to 70% of the coverage of the belt, 5 to 35 millimeters, and that's because that frontal passage is moving more into the area and you get a more organized precipitation pattern.
Turn your attention to Argentina. I guess maybe, what, periodic showers expected?
Yeah, that's right. It's still an unsettled pattern in Argentina. I guess you can say that the pattern will be becoming a little less active compared to what we've seen. It's certainly been a wet regime in Argentina for the past several weeks, but still we're looking at 50-60% coverage, and you're looking at totals about an inch or less in that area of the next week to 10 days.
And temperatures a little bit cooler.
Yeah, it continues to be a little bit of a below normal temperature regime in that area that's been wet, and that tends to give you a cool bias.
Let's turn our attention then back to the United States and the Midwest. What can you tell us about the Corn Belt?
Well, finally, some relief, or at least temporary relief from the heat that we've seen in this just record-shattering heat. Many stations in the eastern Midwest broke all-time October high temperature records over the weekend, which is just a phenomenally impressive statistic. Cold front comes through, or we should call it a cool front, to get us back down to normal for a couple days. But then as you get into the weekend and early next week, we're back into well above normal temperatures, and that looks to be the case through the 20th to the 25th of October.
And maybe rain in the western Corn Belt by the weekend?
Some scattered showers, but really there's going to be a dominant ridge of high pressure that builds in, and the harvest activities are going to be favorable. You know, starting western belt is already starting to get better, and then it moves into the eastern belt for the next 5 to 6 days.
All right, turn your attention to the wheat crop.
Well, certainly that's an area that we continue to monitor as dryness concerns, and it's not widespread dryness at this time. It's spotty, and particularly the western wheat belt is in worse shape from a dryness perspective than the eastern belt is. There's some healthy totals over the weekend in the eastern belt with this cold front coming through. However, as this ridge of high pressure becomes the dominant story, we're going to see an expansion of dryness. And this is really more a plains hard red issue than a Midwest soft red issue. And so that's something we need to watch as it's getting planted and then the emergence stage later in the month into November.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain report, and weather on the web. Go to WILLAG.org and click on the audio link. This is Dave Dickey.